Okay, well, it's a great pleasure to speak in this last workshop. Actually, I say last workshop, but I'm forgetting there is also a final satellite workshop at the University of Reading in 3 weeks' time. It's been a great pleasure to be here at this programme, and I'm going to talk today about some work jointly with some participants of the programme, and some of it very recent in the last sort of 2 or 3 weeks. Okay, and this is sort of very much picking up from, it's picking up one sort of aspect from Oscar Bruno's talk this morning. So in fact, it's picking up one aspect of Oscar Bruno's talk. So one aspect of Oscar Bruno's talk was talking about the Helmholtz equation and boundary integral methods for its solution. So, and then the aspect of that I'm going to talk about is the conditioning of these problems and how that depends on the wave number. And also, to some extent, how it depends on the geometry. And in Oscar Bruno's integral equation formulations, there were some coupling parameters. I'll say something about how the conditioning depends on those as well. Okay, so... These are linear problems, so I'm going to be talking about the condition number. I'm going to formulate the problem in a moment as a boundary integral equation with some operator A. And then I'm going to be interested in the condition number. So, of course, that's just the norm of A times the norm of its inverse. So then I'm going to be interested in estimating the norm of A and estimating the norm of A to the minus 1, which will give me estimates of the condition number. And, of course, we're interested in condition numbers for various reasons, but one important reason is that large condition numbers are associated with slow convergence of iterative solution methods. And so Oscar spent quite a lot of time talking about how to condition the equations so as to have a small number of iterative solution steps. Well, in fact, Ivan, in another context, also talked about the same thing. So I'm going to study the dependence of norm of A and the norm of A to minus 1 on K when A is a specific oscillatory boundary integral operator that I'll talk about in a moment. Okay, so I'm going to tell you the specific problem I'm going to talk about. I'm going to introduce the integral equation formulation and the integral operators, and this will be one of the integral equation formulations that Oscar Bruno talked about this morning. I'm going to talk about the known results, and until very recently, until earlier this year, in fact, really, the known results were only for the case of a circle or sphere, and we'll see why that was a particularly simple case and an easy case to look at in a minute. But even there, the completely rigorous results have only been obtained in two papers published this year. And then I'll talk about the work that's been done with the authors I mentioned on the first page, Ivan Graham, Steve Langdon, Marco Lindner, and Peter Monk, which are results for general Lipschitz obstacles. Okay, and what we'll see, one of the main messages is that the conditioning, things can be done very explicitly for a circle and sphere, but the conditioning is much worse in some cases than it is for a circle or sphere. Okay, so this is the a simple exterior scattering problem that I'm going to talk about. So we've got it's in two or three dimensions. Helmholtz equation, so K here is the wave number, which is proportional to the frequency. So I'm interested in high values of K when K goes to infinity, particularly when the solution becomes oscillatory. So just the Dirichlet boundary condition, and this is some obstacle, which is Lipschitz, which means that locally, everywhere on the boundary, locally, it's the graph of a Lipschitz function. And so my boundary value problem is just to find u, which satisfies the Helmholtz equation in the exterior domain omega plus, u equals g on gamma, and this standard sum of fault radiation condition, which specifies that the field is outgoing. So I'm going to talk about a standard combined single and double layer potential integral equation formulation, which dates back to the 60s. So these people proposed to look for a solution to this problem as a combined single and double layer potential. So in other words, to look for the solution in the form, this here is a double layer potential with some density phi, which is some unknown function which we want to determine. So here, this is the normal derivative at the point y of the fundamental solution phi, x and y, which you saw in Oscar Bruno's talk and in 2D as given in terms of this Hankel function, which to a good approximation is this simple expression, and in 3D is exactly this expression. Okay, so, and then this here is the single layer potential, and so we're looking for a solution as a combination of a double layer potential and a single layer potential with a linear combination where eta here is telling us how much of the single layer potential to take. So in fact, it turns out, so what you would do for Laplace's equation is you just have eta equals zero and you just look for a solution as a double layer potential. That's a classical problem which gives you a classical second kind integral equation in potential theory. But if you have eta equals zero, it turns out the integral equation you get is not uniquely solvable as a certain set of wave numbers. And this fix was discovered in the 60s to get around that. Okay, so we're looking for the solution in this form. And we want u equals g on the boundary. So this satisfies the whole problem. Of course, the attractiveness of this ansatz is that this ansatz automatically satisfies the Helmholtz equation and the radiation condition, and so it satisfies the whole bounded Bode problem as long as u equals g. So taking the limit as x approaches the boundary, ux approaches g of x, this double layer potential approaches the same thing on the boundary plus a half. This should be 5x here. And then this is continuous onto the boundary. So taking the limit from this equation as x approaches the boundary, we get this, except that this should be phi here. So in operator form, I'm going to abbreviate this as A phi, where A is this operator here, equals 2 times g. So I'm multiplying the equation through by 2. And A is identity coming from here, plus double layer potential operator minus I eta times single layer potential operator. So it's this operator A that I'm going to talk about the conditioning of. And so explicitly then, so it's this operator I'm going to talk about the conditioning of. And S here is given by this formula then, and D is given by this formula. Okay, so these operators S and D, of course, they're boundary integral operators. We're integrating, this is surface measure on the boundary, and X here is on the boundary. These are boundary integral operators, and they're oscillatory boundary integral operators because the kernel here is oscillatory because of this e to the ik mod x minus y. And as k tends to infinity, of course, they become increasingly oscillatory. Okay, so it was known already in the 60s that this integral equation is well posed as long as eta is not equal to zero. And recently we've studied the case when the boundary is Lipschitz and shown that A is a bijection from Sobolev space HS plus a half onto HS plus a half for mod S less than equal to a half. Okay, so we know this equation is well posed. So for smooth obstacles, that goes back to the 60s. But what we're going to talk about today is how do the norm of A and the norm of A to minus 1 depend on the wave number, especially in the highly oscillatory limit k tends to infinity. And also, how should we choose eta? And also, how also do they depend on the geometry? I just mentioned that this kind of standard engineering practice is to take eta equals to k. So we'll focus particularly on that choice. But we will ask the question as to whether that choice is optimal in terms of minimising the condition number of the operator. And I'm going to address these questions specifically thinking of A as an operator on H naught gamma, so it's a bijection on H naught gamma, which is just L2 gamma. Okay, so I mentioned that things were known already for the case of a circle or sphere, and investigations for that case date back to Kress and Spassov, and Kress in the 80s. And this is an easy case to do, or relatively easy, so it's not really easy because it's only been sorted out until this year in a rigorous manner. But it's relatively easy in that one knows what the eigenfunctions of the operator A is, AR, yes. And also it's easy as well because A is a normal operator in this case, so the eigenvalues tell you what the singular values are. So not only are spherical harmonics the eigenfunctions, but we can work out what the eigenvalues are. So in 2D, the eigenvalues are precisely this expression here. This is a Hankel function of order m of the first kind. This is the standard Bessel function and its derivative. The norm of A is precisely the maximum of these eigenvalues. The norm of A to minus 1 is precisely 1 over the infimum of these eigenvalues. And so the condition number, of course, is just the ratio of the maximum to minimum eigenvalue. Okay, so we've got an explicit formula. But, of course, it's rather a complicated formula because to work out what this is, particularly in the limit as k tends to infinity, one needs to understand asymptotics of Bessel functions as the argument tends to infinity uniformly in the order. And that's quite a subtle business. So it was only sorted out by Dominguez, Graham and Schmischlaev earlier this year. And one of the nice results they showed was that, in fact, for sufficiently large k, if one chooses eta equals k, the standard choice, then A is in fact elliptic on L2 gamma. So what I mean by that is that the real part of A phi comma phi is greater than or equal to a constant times norm phi squared. And in fact, they showed that a constant was in fact 1 if k was sufficiently big. So this is very nice for numerics because it guarantees the stability of Galerkin methods, at least applied in the case of a circle. But it also implies that the norm of A to minus 1 is less than or equal to 1. And in fact, it's easy to see that norm of A to minus 1 is greater than or equal to 1 as well, so I should write here that norm of A to minus 1 is exactly equal to 1. Okay, so we have a more general result, which in fact applies for more general geometries, but also applies for general choices of eta. So in particular, tells you that A to minus 1, this means less than or equal to a constant times 1 plus k over eta for general choice of eta. And the best, so those estimates on A to minus 1, and the best estimates on S and D are in a recent paper by Banjo and Sauter, where it's established that D remains constant, that the norm of the double air potential operator remains constant, and the norm of the single air potential decreases like k to minus 2/3. So the norm of A, which is identity plus double air potential plus eta times single air potential, is bounded by this. Okay, and putting these results together, it implies that if you choose eta proportional to k to the epsilon, with epsilon between 2/3 and 1, then the condition number grows at worst like k to the third. And in fact, if you choose eta equals k, which is the standard choice, it grows exactly at this rate. Okay, and so here are some plots. So these plots are computed just using this explicit formula here. So these are plots of condition number against k for k between 0 and 5,000. I'm sorry, I couldn't work out how to get these a little bit bigger, but All these curves are showing the condition of increasing proportional to k to the third. These are different choices of eta. This is eta equals k. One of these is eta equals k over 2. I think this is eta equals 0.75 times k to the 2 thirds, and this is eta equals 2 times k to the 2 thirds. The conclusions are that the condition number of A from these numerics and from theoretical results I just showed is that condition number A grows only slowly, like k to the third for a circle or sphere. And in fact, for a circle, condition number of A is only about 100 for k 5 times 10 to the 6th. And that the condition number of A is almost minimized by every choice of eta between 0.75 k to the third, 2 thirds, and k over 2. Okay, so looking at this plot, it looks as if there aren't any condition number problems, really, because these are very modest values of the condition number for very large values of k. Okay, so, but that's the case of a circle and sphere. And of course, one wants to do calculations for more complicated geometries than that. So it's sensible to think about what happens for geometries other than a circle or sphere. And so now I talk about some new results on that, really from the last few weeks. Okay, well, to start with, one can make some simple upper bounds by operator interpolation. So these are simple, and they ignore the oscillation in the oscillatory kernel. So, for example, one can estimate the norm. So here the 2 here means we're thinking of S as this is the norm as of S as an operator on L2 gamma, whereas the 1 here means the norm of S as an operator on L1 gamma, and this is as an operator on L infinity gamma. So by interpolation, we have this estimate that the norm of S on L2 is the maximum of its norm on L1 and L infinity. And in fact, those two are both the same because this is symmetrical in its arguments and they're both equal to this expression here. Okay, so this is valuable because we know we have an exact expression for this. But the exact expression for this, for these norms, involves taking the maximum with a modulus around here. So that takes out the oscillation in the kernel. So in particular, in 3D, if we take moduluses, well, we just get back to the fundamental solution for Laplace's equation. And so clearly this doesn't depend on k, and so we have that this is less than equal to a constant independent of k. And the same for the norm of the double layer potential operator, that's less than equal to k. Okay, so these are, at least we have some bounds for a general Lipschitz domain. But these compare with what we know for a sphere, which is k to minus 2 thirds and 1. And so it looks as if we're overestimating rather badly by ignoring this oscillation. And in 2D, so one can do the same thing in 2D, and what one gets in that case is that the norm of the single layer potential operator is less than equal to constant times k to minus 1/2, and the norm of the double layer potential less than equal to k to the 1/2. And that's coming from sticking this simple estimate for the Hankel function in here that's less than equal to constant times the value of the argument to a power minus 1/2. And that compares to, well, the same bounds as for the sphere. Okay, so we see there's less of a gap here between this simple crude bound ignoring oscillation, but there's still a gap there. But in fact, these simple bounds ignoring oscillation are sharp in some cases. So, for example, in particular, if gamma contains a straight line segment, then not only is this an upper bound, but it's also a lower bound as well. That norm of k behaves precisely like k to minus 1/2. And that then means that if one makes the standard choice eta proportional to k, that the norm of A grows precisely like 1 plus k to the 1/2. Okay, and it's not difficult to see that this is true. So so here's my straight line segment, and here's part of it gamma 1 and part of it gamma 2. So if I take a particular function phi, which is just e to the ik y1 on gamma 1, where y1 is the horizontal direction, and it's 0 elsewhere, and then I think about what the singular potential is doing on gamma 2. Well, on gamma 2, s phi x, so the singular potential at point x on gamma 2, well, it's this integral around the boundary, but phi is only supported on gamma 1, so we're just integrating over gamma 1, where phi is this. And then sticking in what phi is, well, to a good approximation, phi in 2D is just e to the ik mod x minus y, which is just x1 minus y1 if x1's distance along gamma 2 and y1's distance along gamma 1 over k to the half, x1 minus y1 to the half. And this choice here cancels out this oscillation here. And then this oscillation, we can just take it outside. So we're left with an integral which is not oscillatory. And so taking moduluses, it then becomes clear that this is greater than or equal to constant times k to minus a half. Okay, so this bound here, this crude upper bound is sharp in this case when we've got a straight line segment. Okay, and we can refine those estimates, that's methods to get estimates in other cases as well, to get lower bounds in other cases. So here we're getting a lower bound on the norm of S, and we can modify those arguments to get bounds in other cases. So, for example, if gamma contains some C11 line element, then norm of S is greater than or equal to K to minus 2 thirds, which is what we have in the case of a circle. And if it has a slightly smoother line element with a point where the curvature vanishes, then we have a lower bound of K to minus 3 fifths. And if higher moments vanish, then we get a larger number here, which approaches half as it becomes a flat bit of surface. Okay, and the bound we have on the double air potential operator, that the normal double air potential operator is less than or equal to k to the half, is also sharp in the sense that there are Lipschitz surfaces for which it's almost attained. So what I've got here is a surface which is C infinity curve, but then I've put a sawtooth underneath it. So each of these is supposed to have gradient 1. Okay, and then if we do that, then the norm of D is greater than or equal to, is almost behaves like K to the half. And for more normal sort of curves, in particular for a polygon, we don't have something quite that sharp, but D does grow in that case, which it doesn't for the case of a circle or sphere. Okay, so those were some new bounds for the single and double air potential, upper and lower bounds. And then those obviously enable us to get bounds on A, which is given in terms of the double and single air potential. Okay, we can also get bounds on the norm of A to minus 1 for a star-like obstacle. This is joint work with Peter Monk. So if we have a star-like obstacle, which is star-like with respect to the origin, and nx is the outward unit normal at some point x, and r naught is the maximum distance of a point on the boundary from the origin, and this is the smallest value of x dot n. So this is the boundary here, this is the origin here, so x is this, n is the outward normal. So x dot n is just the perpendicular distance to the boundary, so it's the smallest value of that. Okay, so then we have this bound that norm of a to minus 1 is less than or equal to a geometrical parameter theta, which is the ratio of the maximum distance from the origin over the maximum distance, the distance to the nearest side, times this k over eta here. So in particular, for a circle or sphere, this theta equals 1, and we get this band. And for a cube, theta equals root 3, we get this band here. OK, and these are proved by integration by parts, by Green's theorem, and a relic type identity, and this property of radiating solutions of the Helmholtz equation, which is shown by expansions in terms of spherical harmonics. Okay, so let me kind of summarise now as to what we know about this operator. So in particular, for the standard choice, that eta is proportional to k, the norm of A grows for a circle or sphere precisely like k to the third, and the norm of A to minus 1 is bounded independently of the frequency, so the condition number grows like k to the third. For general piecewise smooth Lipschitz domains, so I've just shown you an estimate for norm of A to minus 1 for the starlight case, which tells us that the norm of A to minus S is a constant times 1 plus k over eta. And then we have these crude, simple bounds ignoring oscillation for the single and double air potential, which give us that the norm of A grows at worst like k plus eta. So in particular, for the standard choice, eta proportional to k, the condition number grows at worst like k. Okay, but this, we guess, is probably an overestimate. And certainly there's a big gap between this and k to the third. But on the other hand, there haven't been upper bounds for the condition number before for these problems. In the 2D case, this changes to k to the half. It's multiplied through by a factor k to the minus a half. So the condition number grows at worst like k to the half. So there's less of a gap here between the circle and the general case. And in fact, we know that for certain specific cases, for example, for a polygon, this is actually achieved here. So the condition number grows exactly like k to the half. So these bounds on the condition number, or at least the upper bounds on the condition number, are only valid in the case when the domain is star-like. And we know of no upper bounds when the domain is not star-like. But we do have one lower bound for the case when A is not star-like in the 2D case. And it's for geometries like this. So if the gamma contains two parallel line segments separated by the domain of propagation at some distance A apart, then if K times A is an integer multiple of pi, then norm of A to minus 1 grows at least as fast as k to the 3/4. And so the condition number then grows at least as fast as k to the 5/4. Okay, so that's significantly faster than what we have for a star-like polygon, which is k to the half, and for a sphere, which is, or circle, which is k to the third. Okay, so just some results showing that. So this is the case of the square. So these are only for small values of k. So these are numerical computations approximating the integral operators by some crude discretization and just in MATLAB using the norm. And I think it's calculating the smallest singular value to get the norm of A to minus 1. This is these values of p here, assuming that norm of A is approximately equal to constant times k to some value p, and estimating p from looking at the ratio of this to this. So our theory is that this should approach half as k tends to infinity, and this should approach zero as k tends to infinity. And then for a trapping domain, so this is the domain I just showed you here, this domain here, this should approach 3/4, so this is now growing as k increases, and this should again approach half as k increases. Okay. There are lots of open problems in this area, but perhaps I should stop and just leave those up on the board. Thank you.